Welcome back to the Combat Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peacock, 4-3 black belt in Taekwondo and a martial arts skill training specialist. If you're new to the show, please sign up to the Combat Learning newsletter at combatlearning.com/newsletter. I'll send you cheat sheets on how to transform your drills into maximum skill building games and get you up to speed on the science of motor skill learning for martial arts. Plus, you'll never miss a show. Go to combatlearning.com/newsletter. To get those resources now. In this episode, Dr. Garcia joins us one final time to discuss a few very interesting topics. First, we talk briefly about donor sports and the part they play in building better, more adaptable skills for your main sport. Finally, Dr. Garcia helps us understand how we can use CLA not just for training in the sport itself, but also preparedness that comes with greater skill in stress management. We also talk a little bit about how to use CLA for conditioning as well. So if you're excited to jump in, hit the subscribe button on your podcatcher and enjoy the show. And if you're listening on YouTube, be sure to hit that like button too.
We very early on tried to cut into pieces and then try to feed little by little these pieces. So we're destroying, you know, the base in this sense. We're putting the brakes on their development through that, you know. So what I say is through ecological dynamics as well, you don't need a perfect ideal model where everybody has to go towards, you know, or everybody needs to fit in this model. You can really foster individual personal styles. You know, many times people got lost or get disencouraged because they cannot be them. You know, they have to fit in the mold of somebody that has decided that this is the way you're gonna learn and blah blah blah. And
yep.
You know. For me, it's funny because in the so-called alternative sports like skate or parkour or BMX, they now maybe they have coaches and all that, but traditional they didn't have any coaches.
No, they didn't.
And they got really high performance levels, you know, without any coaches. And right. They were much more respectful with individual styles. So in some sense, they were doing kind of this ecological approach without knowing it, because they were not knowing that, but because they were not forcing everybody to get the same things, you know, they could get this amazing results. And this is really interesting to understand how these communities of practice, they were producing these high level performance athletes without any formal coaching. You know, that right. has to make us think about, you know. And what I say also is that good athletes will be good despite the training methods their coach, you know?
Yeah.
So as long as they train, they will get better and they will get good in the end. So it's a fallacy when they say, okay, because the best athletes are training under this traditional way, infra-processing, blah, 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 whatever, you know? But it doesn't prove anything, you know? Because if you have these good athletes under the ecological dynamics, okay, you're going to get results. I'm sure of that, you know? So the only thing is that nowadays, because of the still cultural traction that these models have and our pedagogical models have, is really difficult to go or shift or to jump into the unknown, because for many people, this is a very different way to approach things, you know. So
right.
So but let me tell you that, for instance, even if it's not an ecological dynamics approach, the teaching gains for understanding is really, mm-hmm. I mean, it's close. It's not the same, but it's close in their approach, you know. And from the 80s, mm-hmm. they're doing good things. But maybe is more common in team sports.
Yes.
So maybe combat that. Sports, yeah. So combat sports is really new to that, but I'm pretty sure that it's going to get traction for sure. Because I mean, people are getting already results and in competition as well. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's promising. You know, the line of development and effort is promising.
Yeah, I think there's two ways in which it's going to force its way in. The first is from a business perspective, you stand to keep more students. They stay longer. Mm-hmm. They have more fun. It's just more fun.
Yeah.
And then and the other perspective is they become adaptable. They gain skill faster than in the other mm-hmm. way, even if it's not immediate, obvious up front.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're going to get results. Competition are going to start getting results that they didn't get before with more mm-hmm. people, more people from their training base. Mm-hmm. So those are the two ways I think that even if not exactly constraints-led approach, that at least game-based training will be the status quo here in a few years. Of course, I want it to be constraints-led approach, right?
Yeah.
I want it to be the ecological approach, but yeah.
Yeah. And don't forget about the individual style. This is important mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
That people get a feeling that, okay, this is me. You know, this is me doing this thing, you know. So this is really, you know, adding something to the equation,
mm-hmm.
you know. And yeah, I wanted to throw also in the equation. Have you heard about the idea of donor sport?
Yeah, from the athletic skills donor? Model. Yeah.
Donor sport? Okay.
Donor sport.
So, So I don't know if you know about this Indian sport that's called Kabaddi. Kabaddi?
No.
You can check later. So it's K-A-B-A-D-D-I. Okay. So what they have to is like two teams and two teams of six, I think, no? And they take turns and one attacker goes to the other field and the attacker has to say all the time, Kabaddi, 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 just because you cannot get a breath. This is the time that you have. If you get a breath as well, you're discarded, you know. But the thing is that it's like a chase tag game, but with wrestling, mixed with wrestling. Because if you see the images, you're going to understand what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So what I see is that there are some games and some sports that if you understand the constraints-led approach, you understand that they make perfect sense to build these general combat attributes or fighting skills or whatever. And if you don't understand that, you're going to be blind to all this spectrum of games, mini games. Once you understand that, you can create your own. You know, once you understand that and you understand the that's why I talk about education of attention and education of intention. So if you understand that you can create tasks and games with some specific intentions, some goals that you can provide for them. So that's for instance, Sauders do this all the time, you know, and these pinning games and all that,
mm-hmm.
they give like very precise aims and they're like games, but I understand that he has a profound thinking on the design of this task.
Yes.
Know? Because to be like a very thoughtful and very, you know, busy coach, you need to be a designer. You know, that's the main thing in the constraint-led approach. You have to think a lot before going to class. Otherwise, it's really, I mean, the traditional model is so lazy in this sense, you know, that, okay, you go there, you know the move, the techniques, do this, do that, this is good, this is bad, blah, 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 blah. But you don't need to make all this designing of the tasks beforehand, you know? So,
so that's... Oh, you have a problem here. Okay, do 50 repetitions of it.
And it is very frustrating for the coach and for the students, because once you have said something, if this person is not getting it, because you say again or louder, is not going to solve the thing, you know? So you need to create other ways, other tasks that provide that, you know? So I don't know, for me, despite of the discipline that you're training, like, let's say wrestling or grappling or some kind of a striking, doesn't matter. You could implement this kind of training for sure, and I've heard in some of the guests in your podcast, they are doing it in boxing, in judo, or in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So more and more people are getting into the field, and what I love to hear is that all these people, they get together at some point and develop like a general frame for knowing how to fight or combat fighting, you know? So you have like the whole spectrum, you know, from standing and striking to ground floor. And you have all these different games and tasks that you can implement, you know, just for this general development. It's like the swimming that I told you before, you know, like once you have a general capacity, then you can specify in as many styles as you want, but you need this thing, this broad base, you know. So this is the same in combat. You need to understand timing and distance, and then the kusushi, what they call sushi, the imbalance, and then the round work. So, and to understand that, maybe you don't need to put a lot of techniques in the mix, you know?
Right.
I would love to see a program, a training program of kids or people just doing this general approach, this constraints-led approach, and then people learning through all these techniques and then put them together to compete. And let's see, you know, because
me too.
because that would be like an experimental setting, really, you know, with the control groups and all that. So that would be fantastic because
just need the resources for it and people that are willing to do it for 6 weeks to 6 months or however long. Probably better for 6 months, but
I'm sure that or this is my hypothesis, that the ones that are trained through the constraint-led approach, they would do better. They would be better.
Yeah, because they train just in the rule set all the time, and then anything that isn't, you know, free sparring is something that's can donate skills to free sparring. You know, whatever sport you choose, whether it's kickboxing or karate or taekwondo or jujitsu, you see the information. Whereas when you're just doing drills, you're trying to recall a sequence of movements that have to look a certain way. You're not responding to anything from an opponent, right? Or you're also not creating actions in your opponent either, because they know exactly what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it, which is usually nothing. just lie there and present your arm.
there's another concept that I want to throw. It's the concept of nested affordances that maybe hasn't appeared in here. And nested affordances is really interesting because in nested affordances, let's say I'm going to read that. Nested affordances. Okay. So, you know, the decision making that happens in a sequence, you know, mm-hmm. in a sequence, maybe you have a general goal, like, okay, I'm going to submit this person. But before that, I need to do some actions before, you know? So
right.
as you go towards this ultimate goal, you're going to find affordances. It's called nested affordances. So once you perceive this affordance and make this action, then another affordance comes, and then another. So it's like a whole sequence. And if you don't perform the first thing, you're not going to get the other. So in some sense, they're connected through concatenated goals as well, you know?
Right.
But this is really different from a memorized sequence of movements.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that you see this affordance, you perform this action that allows you to get to or to perceive this new mm-hmm. affordance to perform this action. But this is really different from a repetition of just simple movements. Because right. if you're just getting this repetition of simple movements, if the opponent gets changes, let's say, you're lost in the sequence. But in the nested affordance approach, no, because you just perceive other option with the mm-hmm. change of this the person. You just perceive other action. So, you know, it's interesting this idea of how they can be concatenated and is really different from just concatenated movements, you know? Mm-hmm. So nested affordance, let's say, would be connected to concatenated actions. Remember when we were talking about actions and movements, the difference? So that's, mm-hmm. that's the same thing, you know? So you're yeah. just trying to perform actions that are getting you close to your ultimate goal. Is not just a repetition of movements because I don't know what I'm doing and I have to do it, you know, because somebody has told me that later on I'm going to find something, you know, in the end.
Yeah.
Know? So, yeah.
Mm. Excellent. I want to talk about something we had talked about offline, or we didn't really talk about, but I wanted mm-hmm. to get to it was using CLA to prepare your body for combat. Like to, I guess in a conditioning sense, that's the way that I think I understood that. So how can you use the constraints-led approach to actually build yourself up and prepare yourself to engage in a combat sport?
Mm. Yeah, there's like two different ways to deal with this topic. One is, as you said, directed to attributes or physical conditioning. The other one that is connected to a skill, we have, or maybe you have talked about this in all the podcasts. So we're going to get about the physical conditioning. What I'm saying is that mainly, or the main thing is not about, endurance or resistance, like in I don't know, doing push-ups or doing that thing. No. The main thing in combat sports, it's about stress management. This is the main thing, you know? So you could develop activities where you're really aiming at a different scale of stress or stress inoculation, you know?
Yeah.
And this is really connected to contact and also with breathing. So you should generate situations in which I mean, you could learn how to manage this this stress, you know. So for instance, I don't know, just a silly thing, you know, a silly thing. Like in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're going to get a lot of pressure, you know, when somebody is on top, and many times you cannot breathe. You know, mm-hmm. you're just feeling that you're going to get out of air, and this is really this produce panic and really anxious. No, so why don't you do this adaptation or this or this training with previous simple task, like for instance, you're just lying on the ground, and somebody is going to put all the weight with the chest or the belly, and in there you just have to be there, sense what's going on with your breathing. If you can stay calm, in the sense that this situation is much lower in stress or intensity than real sparring, but it still is really really stressful for a person that is not really used to that. So in this sense, you're really getting to understand the relation between breathing, relaxation, anxiety, panic mode, you know. And then when you're doing a sparring, you're not going to be out of air all the time. Like when you hear that, it's because there's no, you know, there's no good management of stress and breathing, you know. But you need to design this task or these games. For instance, with the breathing, you can do a lot of things. Like for instance, you could say to start sparring or to start sparring, let's say. So one person, for instance, could just start breathing, and then get all the air out of the lungs and make an apnea. And the time that the person cannot resist, they start breathing. But at that point, the sparring starts.
Yeah.
You know, so in this sense, you have started at a very, very, very high level of stress to start the actions, you know.
Interesting.
So you can play with all these things to put the level of stress up or down, or you know. So and just by right. these simple things, you know, and for instance, all other stuff that is really important is people how to get used to contact, you know, right. in a striking sports. If you start by saying, okay, this is the block, this is how you evade the punch, this is blah, 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 but you're not getting used to real contact, you know, in the face or in the body. So you can start by playing doing some task where this contact is already there, you know? Like, for instance, this is from Sistema, like somebody is lying and the other is doing push-ups with the fist in different parts of the body. So you get really, you know, the pressure, but you can get used to this contact without being too damaging at the mm-hmm. from the very beginning, you know, because if you're not getting used to that in a sparring, you're so scared of that you're going to avoid. But right. this avoiding behavior is causing you not be able to advance in your skills, because you're doing this. I mean, you're getting a lot of distance. You're not getting the right distance and all that. So in order to get out some of this fear, you need to introduce contact But I mean, from with lower intensity at the beginning, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I've never heard of doing push-ups on somebody's face. That's new for me.
Or in the neck, or you know, or in the mouth of the stomach, or you know, because in this sense you're getting some discomfort in contact, mm-hmm. because it's not pleasurable, let's say, but it's not as hard as a punch in a sparring, you know. So mm-hmm. in the end, it's getting these middle range activities that can produce some stress, but inoculate some stress, but help you to build this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, many times it's like or nothing or everything, 0% or sparring all, you know. So
yeah.
Some people they can make this jump and they survive and then they thrive, but some people they get like stuck or discouraged or they just abandon because it's too much, you know. This jump is too much, so
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So they shut down and run away.
Yeah, yeah, and that's because we have not thought about these middle range activities, tasks, or games, you know,
right.
to make them stay.
Yeah. Excellent, man. Wow, this has been really, really instructive. If people want to reach out to you and pick your brain about what you're researching or anything more about your thoughts on the ecological approach, where can they find you?
Okay, so the easiest way, I think, is through my email. That is Raul Sangar, RaulSangar @gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or Raul Sangar WordPress.com. Or they can go also to ResearchGate. ResearchGate is like a website for researchers. That you can put there my name, Raul Sanchez García, and you see some of my stuff there. But maybe the email is the easiest way, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, I went to your ResearchGate, and you got a lot of interesting. You get a lot on there. It's very diverse. You weren't kidding about that. There's a lot of different studies on there. I recommend everybody to check that out. There's a lot of good stuff on there, man. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, and congratulations, because I really think that the message in the podcast is really relevant, really important, and is going to grow more and more relevant. I'm sure of that. So in some years, it's going to turn the tables, you know. So constraints led is going to lead.
Yes. We'll lead. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, Josh.
Thanks so much for listening to the Combat Learning Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really helps us out. Finally, this episode, including the intro music, is produced by Micah Peacock. Thanks in advance, and I'll see you on the next episode. We'll be right back.